This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Real You. You're listening to Raise Your Game. Have you ever felt bored and uninterested at work? Do you feel that you're working hard and not seeing results? Does your day end with frustration and disillusionment? What happened after all you love this job? It could be leader's block, a phase where leaders feel demotivated and unengaged. These are the same leaders who at one point found their work stimulating and exciting, and over several candid interviews, senior professionals reveal why they felt this way and the circumstances that caused it. Ritu G. Merish uncovers reasons behind this feeling and the antidote to this malady. Who is Ritu? She's an executive coach and speaker with 20 years of corporate experience in companies such as Procter & Gamble, G Capital, and a spin-off, Genpact. Thanks for being with us, Ritu.
Thanks, Tara, for having me on the show.
This is a very interesting title to your book, and also, you know, I know that a lot of people feel this way. So do tell me, you know, what got you excited about writing this, and what is leader's block?
Okay, great. Let me start answering the first by answering the first question. What got me excited about this topic or this area? So, Freda, as you said, you know, I have 20 years of corporate experience, and I've been lucky. You know, I've had the opportunity to work with some of the best leaders in the corporate world, and also, you know, across the globe. And what I realized was that, you know, most of the leaders whom I worked with were pretty good, successful. But I also found out when I worked closely with them that there were times where they felt stuck and they were not on top of their game, and yet they couldn't reach out or they couldn't talk about you know, about this particular area and say that I need help. And the other thing that I realized, that always made me wonder, why don't leaders, you know, if they know they're getting stuck, why aren't they reaching out for help? You know, what's the issue in reaching out for help? And then later on, when I started researching for my book, I realized there are hundreds and thousands of books, articles, talks that tell people, you know, especially they tell leaders how to be more effective, more productive, more profitable. But nobody, or rarely anybody, talks about the real challenges that the leaders go through in their leadership journey. I looked up a lot of stuff, but didn't find anything there. And having lived that life for 20 years, I knew it personally that, of course, in the leadership journey, there'll be a lot of times where you're going to face challenges, setbacks, obstacles, blocks. But he didn't talk with me about it. And that's what intrigued me about exploring this particular topic more.
How long did it take for you to get this book going?
From an idea to a published book, it was just a few months short of 2 years. And a big part of that went in researching. For the book, I interviewed over 200 leaders across the globe. You know, across different geographies, industries, sectors, gender. That took a big chunk of the time, almost 6 to 8 months, and then there was 18 months of writing.
So do you sometimes look at these people and say, oh, it's possibly midlife crisis? We like to sort of just say, is it a midlife crisis?
Very interesting question. And I, you know, somebody's asked me that before too. Midlife crisis or mid-career crisis, they're now happening almost at the same time. But I the reason I don't think it's midlife crisis, because not necessarily related to age. However, it is related to, you know, your corporate experience or your work experience, because initial maybe 6 to 8 years of your, you know, of your working life, you are very open to learning, very open to asking for help, and you get a lot of guided support. Because, you know, when you join a company, there's a very clear path how to do things. There's a manager who will teach you things. So it's easier. as you start rising in your career, do you start thinking, I'm supposed to be self-sufficient, I'm supposed to know it all, and therefore it becomes difficult to ask for help? And the reason, sometimes your mid-career and your midlife could almost be aligned, you know. So typically when you're at 40, or, you know, I'm just putting a number there, you're 40, you've achieved certain things, your career has come to a certain point, but you're searching for something bigger and better. That's when you start to find yourself getting stuck. So I would say it's more mid-career. But having said that, I interviewed leaders who got it much later in their career or who had it much earlier in their career.
In one of the chapters of your book, you talk about the symptoms of leader's block. And I think it'd be interesting to identify some of these symptoms, whether it's yourself or whether you're leading someone to notice these symptoms in your employees.
Yes. So, symptoms, right? And I'll just step back a little bit, because the reason I came up with this whole symptom thing was, in the book, I've compared leader's block to flu. And the reason I've done that is because, one, it's as common as, you know, as flu, because every leader gets it. And the second thing is that just as flu is contagious, leader's block can be contagious. Mm-hmm. Imagine a demotivated leader trying to motivate a team, or an uninspired leader trying to inspire a team. So if the leader himself is uninspired and demotivated, there is no way that he'll be able to do that for his team. So that's why it's called it flu, because it's contagious. And therefore, then, it's just as in flu, we know the symptoms. Similarly, leaders lock staff with something, which can serve as early warning signs. Very basic ones are, you know, if you find yourself demotivated or disengaged over a period of time, it's not like 2 days at work or 3 days at work, but week after week, if you're disengaged in meetings, if the first thing you come to office, you're looking at Facebook, or you're sitting in meetings, scrolling through your phone, the level of disengagement, you definitely know something is brewing up if that behavior continues for some time. If you find yourself being cynical or skeptical, you know, oh, this has always been done like this, this will never work, I've seen it all, we've done it all. Cynicism and skepticism, two very important giveaways. That something is wrong, because, you know, the whole narrative is very negative. The third thing is also your level of, your level of confidence. When you're going through leader's block, you somehow start to feel not so good, because, you know, you're not performing on top of your game, you're feeling disengaged, and therefore your confidence, your self-esteem takes a hit. You start to feel lost, like, you know, where is my life going? Where is my career going? That question continuously comes up in your mind, but you're not able to do anything about it. Those are very behavioral symptoms, that a leader can see in themselves and observe in themselves. And the same behavior they can observe in others. And therefore, they know that something could be, you know, something could be brewing, something could be happening.
It's very interesting what you said about how your behavior is going to affect the team. If you're not, you know, if you're not feeling motivated, how this will also impact the team. We'll touch on internal and external triggers and ways to overcome this in just a moment. I'm here with Ritu Gutamerish talking about her book, A Leader's Block. Stay tuned to Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to Race Again. Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. I'm here with Ritu Gutamerish talking about her book, Leader's Block. Earlier on, we covered the symptoms of leader's block. You know, maybe if we were to step back, Ritu, what are some of the internal or external triggers that have caused this?
So the way leader's block can be triggered, and as you rightly said, there are some internal triggers and there are some external triggers. Now, let's talk about some internal triggers first. Now, internal triggers are a lot driven by situations which are a little bit under your control and also created by the leaders themselves. So, for example, personality types. Now, you know, everyone has a different personality. Every leader is unique. Some leaders seek, you know, seek excitement, novelty, new things every, you know, every often, every 2 years or 3 years, whatever the number may be. And there are some people that are very happy in their job doing the same thing 5 years, or they constantly create some excitement and they continue with the job. So the tendency for leaders to get stuck or to start getting bored in their role is driven by their own personality. And in the book, I call that something as role fatigue, where, you know, it's not the number of years that you spend in the role, but it's about the excitement, the opportunity to innovate, to learn new things in a role. And for some leaders, that's something, like I said, after 2 years of being in the role. For some, it can come even after 5 years or 10 years. And that's internally driven because it's different people looking at their jobs differently. That's one, internal trigger. One of them is role fatigue. The second, you know, related to that is personalities, as I talk. Some people are constantly looking for greener pastures, and therefore there's constantly hopping of roles, hopping of jobs with them, looking for that satisfaction. The other thing is, you know, so these are two examples of internal, and they're more in the book. The top two examples of external triggers are things that are not in your control. So, for example, the environment, the economy, or if your company is going through some mergers and acquisition, or your company has been acquired or merged, or your company is going through restructuring, and how that impacts your role and how that impacts you is an external trigger. So that's something that's not completely in your control. The other external thing is your supervisor. Sometimes working with a supervisor with whom you're not very well aligned, not only in terms of your operational style or your working style, but it could also be a set of values, set of things that you hold close to your heart and are of importance to you. Those kind of misalignments with your supervisor or with your organization, those could be examples of external triggers.
One of the chapters talk about prevention. Can we actually prevent this from happening within the organization, or are there some things that an individual has to take responsibility for themselves?
You know, going back to the flu example, you know, just as, like I talked about being contagious and the symptoms, so continuing that comparison, now, just like flu, leaders can't be prevented completely, okay? So you can't, it isn't possible to have complete immunity, and you won't even want that, because every setback makes you learn something. However, what you can do proactively is to reduce the intensity and reduce the frequency of that flu or of leader's loss by taking some preventive measures. And that is a combination of individual actions as well as things that an organization can do. In fact, in the book, I have a chapter dedicated to role of an organization, because organization plays a big role. And similarly, in preventing leaders' block, leaders can take individual action, as well as also at an organization level, leaders can start to you know, put in place things that can prevent their subordinates or their teams, you know, from getting into a leader's block. So your question, it's at both levels.
Right. So what can an organization do? I can imagine, you know, what was an individual who was once a star performer and then not performing as well anymore. What can organizations do?
A couple of things. Firstly, it's the culture, right? The organization can start to build a culture where they encourage people to talk about leaders' block, talk more openly about leaders' block. In a sense, if leaders are getting stuck, if leaders are getting blocked, is there enough, like, you know, is the culture open enough for them to talk about it? Because remember, these are not your, you know, if a leader is going through a leader's block, it's not like the leader is a poor performer. It's suddenly he or she finds themselves stuck. So it's like, you know, organizations don't have to treat their leaders like very binary, either they're good or bad. You know, it's the journey from you know, let's say good to great, they will go through some of these periods. And organizations need to recognize that nobody can have a perfect run. You know, if you look at people in sports or in politics, in entertainment, everybody has a bad season or a bad phase. And leaders are no different. That's the bigger theme of my work, is about humanizing leadership. Stop treating our leaders like superheroes. They are humans. And as humans, they will fail, falter, stumble. And the key is to be able to recognize that and then bring them back on track or get themselves back on track. And therefore, that's the role that organization plays, is one, the open culture, and acknowledgement that every leader will have a bad phase, and therefore empathize and provide them support they need at that point in time. Some of the structural changes could be things like encouraging coaching, mentoring, reverse mentoring, you know, opportunities for creating forums or safe zones where people talk about, you know, their phases more openly. So there's, you know, organization plays a big role. If you think about it, who is an organization? It's a group of leaders, right? It's a group of people. So yeah, so in my view, organization plays a big role in helping leaders not only overcome leader's loss, but even recognize and acknowledge that that's the key.
Ritu, why should someone get your book?
Well, they should read the book because it's been getting good reviews. But on a serious note, the book is, you know, my whole intent behind the book is for the leaders, by the leaders. As leaders read the book, they'll find their stories in it. Because it's written in a very anecdotal form, it's written in a very simple form. And I can guarantee every reader who picks up the book will find his or her story in some form or the other in there. Because, like I said, I interviewed 200 leaders, it's their stories in it. And also, Clara, you know, when I was in the corporate world and I used to travel extensively, I wanted to pick a book which understood what I'm going through and which didn't necessarily tell me what to do better or what to do differently. So it's not preachy. It's written in a simple form. Somebody can pick up, you know, on a 5-hour flight and almost finish the book during the flight. So everything about the book is written keeping in mind the leaders and their lives and the lives that I'm very familiar with, having lived that for 20 years myself.
How can people get hold of you? How can they find you?
They can find me. Okay, so I'm pretty active on social media. Find me on LinkedIn, and my LinkedIn name is Ritu Jean Herrish. They can go to my website, which is www.rituherrish.com. They can follow me on Facebook, Ritu Jean Herrish, or they can just find me on YouTube. Again, my YouTube channel name is Ritu Jean Herrish.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Ritu.
Thank you so much, Clara, for having me on the show. And I do hope your listeners and our listeners got something valuable from our chat today. Thank you so much.
I've been speaking to Ritu Jean Herrish, talking about book Leader's Block on Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.